All right, before we start the podcast, I have some great news for anyone who loves music or just listening to podcasts. Bose has actually been gracious enough to send me 3 noise-canceling wireless QC35 headphones to give out to my listeners. These are the exact headphones that I actually purchased at the store for $350. They are by far the best headphones I've ever had. We just had our Pac-12 Network football training camp tour. It was 12 stops in 15 days. I can't even tell you how many flights I was on. I don't know how I traveled without noise-cancellation headphones on plays before that. So over the next 3 months, I'm going to be giving away 1 pair each month. So this month, all you have to do in order to win these things, and it's not that hard, just head to iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review the Give Me a Sense podcast. But the writing the review part is really huge. So right now, I think at last check, I think I have 24 reviews that are up there. So at the end of the month, my last guest who's going to be on the show is going to pick a number from 1 to however many reviews I have at that point. It'll play kind of like a raffle, to be honest with you. The headphones, once again, no joke, $350 a pop. Even if you don't necessarily need headphones or you already have a sweet pair, they're an awesome gift. So once again, head to iTunes, rate, subscribe, and review the Give Me a Sense podcast. And as soon as you write that review, you are automatically entered to win these headphones. Right now, on to our guest, the one and only Mike Hill.
When somebody that you have grown up admiring and respecting and idolizing comes to you and tell you how much they enjoy you. When that happens, dude, it's like, wow. It's almost like, mama, I made it. My first experience was, you know, I'm in the bathroom at ESPN, and I'm at the urinal, man. I'm just handling my business, and in walks in this guy, 6'9", or whatever, and he comes to the urinal right next to me, and he looks over to me, and I look up, and he says, "What's up, young fella? What's going on, man? How you doing, Mike?" It's Magic Johnson.
Wow.
Taking a whiz right next to me. It's my first time meeting this dude. I'm like, yo, now I'm too nervous to even pee. I'm like, yo, this dude is Magic Johnson. No, and I'm like, I'm happy that he's there. I don't.
And you're not shaking hands after.
Yeah, we're not shaking hands. You know, the man cove, I can't really look at him while he's doing his thing, and then he shouldn't be looking at me. You know how that goes and all that. Yep. So there's that little tension right there. But at the same time, it's like, did he say my name? He knows me?
You watched them. You cheered for them. Maybe you booed them. You listened to them. You were impressed by them. Today, they share their favorite memories with you. It's the Give Me a Sense podcast. Here's your host, Mike Yam.
Well, our next guest here on the Give Me a Sense podcast is one of my favorite people that I've had an opportunity to work with when it comes to creative minds or just guys that are super creative on air and really let their personality shine. I'd be hard pressed to come up with another guy other than Mike Hill. Met him, worked with him at ESPN. He's dominating it right now. FS1, you can catch him on Fox Sports Radio. Just started his own production company, Thrill of Entertainment, which is a cool thing I want to talk to him about. Mike, thank you so much for coming on the show for a few minutes.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. And everything you said, I can just turn right back on you, man. I enjoy working with you. You're a very creative guy, man, and just one of the nicest guys I've ever worked with in the business. You just do it the right way, so I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, I that means a lot, man, because I know you and I had a lot of fun when we were on set together. And I think we have a lot of similarities in the sense of, like, we're both sports fans, we're both in broadcasting, and I think my favorite thing is we both were born in the Bronx. Now, you picked the wrong baseball team because you're a Yankee fan, and I get that. Maybe, I don't know, some people in the Bronx would say that I was brought up the wrong way as a Mets fan.
Yeah, you got it flipped. Yeah, you're born in Queens. You were born in the Bronx. So I picked the right one. You went wrong. You went astray.
I know. Well, I did go to. I know. Well, I went to Fordham, so at least I had the college ties back there. One of my best friends in the world. He grew up a few blocks from Yankee Stadium. We used to go to Yankee games together as well. You actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think I heard this story. You used to work at Yankee Stadium, right?
Yeah, I worked at Yankee Stadium. I started off. I used to be at Yankee Stadium after the game was over because I was one of those sweepers. I started doing the popcorn thing or whatever, but I wasn't making a lot of money, and I found out you can make more money actually sweeping up the stadium after the game was over. So the game would end around 10:30, 11 o'clock or whatever. We go out there and with brooms, actually pushing the yuck and all the garbage from between the seats or whatever, man. And it was the nastiest job I've ever had in my life, but, you know, it paid well. So when you're 16, 17 years old, you're doing it in the summertime from 11:30 until like 5 o'clock in the morning, man, it kind of paid off.
Wow.
And, you know, you'd find money on the ground, you'd find jewelry, you'd find all kind of crazy stuff that fans in the Bronx would leave behind. But, you know, that was one of the nastiest jobs, one of the hardest jobs I've ever done, but, you know, it was worth it.
Did you think at 16, 17, as you're in Yankee Stadium, sort of like this iconic mecca for baseball, that fast forward, you'd be broadcasting, you'd be covering the Yankees, you'd be surrounded by sports as a profession?
I knew back then when I was young. I remember because the thing is, I grew up right across the street from Yankee Stadium. That's one of the reasons I'm a Yankees fan. I was on 158th Street and Girard Avenue. Girard Avenue is one block over from River Avenue.
Hold on, Mike.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You were on Girard. My old roommate from college lived on Girard.
Oh, yeah?
And I thought he was 157.
831 Girard.
So
he was like a block down from me.
Yeah.
I was 158th Street and Girard Avenue, 831 Girard Avenue. Yep.
Because right the there. Police station's right on the corner from where he was.
Yeah, okay, yeah, know exactly where that is.
Wow.
I know exactly where, yeah. So I can go on the roof and I can literally look right down the Yankee Stadium. And from my grandmother's apartment, she lived on the fourth floor. I really couldn't see inside because it was on the fourth floor, wasn't high enough. But I could look over and I could see, you know, the upper deck and all that stuff. I could see the loge area or whatnot at Yankee Stadium. But you go on the roof, you can see down onto the second base area. You couldn't see the outfield, but you can see the second base area. And so that's how I kind of, you know, became a huge Yankee fan. So, you know, it was some enjoyable times when I was in the Bronx.
Wow. See, my buddy's apartment where he grew up would face Grand Concourse, so the other side of the where Yankee Stadium was. So you didn't have that view, but
Grand
we
Concourse
were pretty close. Oh, yeah.
The Grand Concourse is just two blocks up, Walton and then the Grand Concourse.
Yeah. God, what a small world. That's crazy to me. You know, Mike, one of the reasons why I wanted you on the show is because this podcast is all about stories. And, we've had broadcasters on before, but I think your path is so unique. I don't know another person in the business that took the path that you did. A lot of people might not be aware of this, but you actually started, you have a military background. How do you go from military? First of all, why the decision to go that route? And then how do you get into broadcasting? Mm-hmm.
Well, honestly, man, when I moved from New York and moved down south to Alabama and went to high school down there, I think I was smart enough. I just didn't apply myself, and I wasn't disciplined enough. And I knew that if I would have gone to college, I probably would have gone for a year and come back and tried to get a job, and I just wouldn't have made it. Because I've seen so many of my friends and so many people of the neighborhood that did the same thing, and they just ended up back in the neighborhood working just a regular job. Nothing wrong with that. You know, hard work is hard work, but, you know, making a good paycheck and legitimate paycheck is a good legitimate paycheck. But I didn't want to go that route. So I had two cousins who were actually in the military, two cousins that were like my male role models, because I didn't have a lot of male role models growing up that I looked up to, and they were in the military, and they came from the same city. And they were nice, they were clean, they had money in their pocket, they had nice cars or whatever. And I said, you know what, this is the route I should take. This will give me the discipline, this will give me the money I need right now. This will also set me up so that I can go to college a little bit later on. And so that's the reason I went into the military and spent 6 years there. And in the beginning, I wasn't actually doing anything in broadcasting, even though I wanted to do broadcasting. They gave me a top secret clearance. Now, this was before 9/11, yeah, so I don't think the backgrounds were as extensive or as intense as they are right now, but they gave me a top secret clearance. And
wow.
I guess the FBI or the CIA agents that came into the neighborhood that was asking the questions, they didn't ask the right questions, because I still don't know how I got that military clearance, to be honest with you, that top secret clearance. But I digress. I got it, and the last 3 years of my career in the military, I worked at the NSA, the National Security Agency, man. And inside there, that's when I kind of, you know, I had an internship in Baltimore doing sports, and they knew about that, and they wanted to develop a newscast. So they knew I was somebody that was doing that, you know, going to school part-time, and I was interning. and they said, let's do a newscast instead of doing these boring briefings that we give to the CIA, FBI, the president, Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Pentagon, and NSA, and all these other government agencies. Let's do it as a newscast, and you'll have a co-anchor, and it was just like a newsroom, and we would do it, and it was all classified, but it was seen by some, high-ranking officials in the United States government, man. And, you know, even though I couldn't take that tape out, it gave me my start and taught me how to be an anchor. And I was basically Peter Jennings and Tom Brokaw before Peter Jennings and Tom Brokaw. So I would do something on our newscast, and then I would see it 2 weeks later. So I was breaking news before them. But, of course, I couldn't talk about it because it was all classified until they actually, declassified it. So it was cool, man. It was a blessing. And
that's amazing.
The day I got out of the military, was the day I got my first job in broadcasting. Same day I got discharged, same day I got my job. 2 hours after I got discharged from the military, I got a call from Hagerstown, Maryland, and asked me if I wanted to do weekend sports for them. So it's been a blessing.
Who can you? What's the best secret you can tell me?
I will say this. Now I will look at you know how we're talking about Big Brother that watches and all those secrets that you hear about. Hey, Big Brother's watching. Just know that you got a lot of Big Brothers. That's why I'll just say it that way.
Okay, so that's fair.
Don't ever think that what you have going on your smartphone isn't being monitored some kind of way. And it's a lot of times, I don't know how I might get in trouble for even saying this, but it's highly illegal to listen to a United States citizen without a warrant or whatever. But, and at the time, I will say this, back in the day, if you heard something and you knew it was United States citizen, identified as United States citizen, you were supposed to hang up. But there were other rooms that I couldn't go into that had higher security clearances that, let's just say that I kind of heard that, they had a little bit more access and a little bit more leeway to do certain things. So I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I appreciate that insight because that now changes how I use my cell phone moving forward. And I'm glad I have that note. And I'll also say this, because you have your new production company, Thrill of Entertainment, as I made reference to, you must watch shows like Homeland vastly different than I would watch Homeland.
I mean, you can see things, for the production value. You can see the great acting. You can see how things are done. Mainly with my production company, I do concepts and ideas. I wrote my first ever script a couple of months ago. I wrote a comedy, a 30-minute sitcom, and so I'm trying to shop that right now. But mainly right now, because of my broadcasting background, I'm doing more studio shows, trying to come up with concepts and ideas for great talk shows, and whether it be in sports or pop culture or entertainment or something like that. So I'm coming up with those concepts. I got one show that I got a production deal, development deal, working with a third-party production company for comedians. I got a lot of friends who are comedians, and they tell great stories. So we're trying to find a way to be able to tell these stories in a very humorous, of course, and entertaining manner, and something that's going to intrigue people. So we got that, and we're going to put a little animation behind it and all that stuff. It's going to be like, we remember Dave Chappelle and Charlie Murphy's True Hollywood Stories.
Oh yeah,
Dave Chappelle show. Yeah,
absolutely.
So we're kind of working on something similar to that, but we got a little twist to it as well.
I like it. Did you watch Crank Yankers back in the day?
Oh, I did. Absolutely. Yes.
Spoonie Love. It's just funny because when you mentioned some of that, the comedic stuff and the Chappelle show, I always flash back to those days. Well, look, I want to circle back here because your experience on air is as significant as really any other broadcaster in the country. How do you land a job 2 hours after you get discharged on air? Because to me, that first of all, the military thing is fascinating, but then to get a job in such a short period of time, like how do you even send out tapes while you're serving the country?
Wow. Here's the thing. I guess it's a little bit misleading to say I got it 2 hours after I got off. It wasn't like I was like, okay, I'm out of the military, let me go look for a job, and bam, first person I call, they called me back 2 hours later. No, it wasn't anything like that. Of course, I knew I was getting out of the military maybe 5 or 6 months before. I had an internship and I was sending out tapes. Yeah, I mean, you know how it is, man. Trying to get that first job sometimes for a lot of people is just incredibly hard. And it was hard for me. I sent out 74 tapes. I sent out 74 tapes, man. And, you know, what's crazy about it, to this day, I still got all the rejection letters that I got from those 74 tapes. I got 70 rejection letters. I got 4 callbacks. 2 was critiquing my tape. And 2 basically kind of gave me an interview over the phone, right? So 2 places, I remember this place in Grand Junction, Colorado, a lady that was a news director there, really nice lady, she told me in the beginning, she said, well, I saw your tape. You're not getting the job, but I did want to give you some advice. And I appreciate it, but I'm like, oh, wow, this is how it's working. Okay, well, she gave me some advice, and it kind of helped me out a little bit. And then one of them was the job in Hagerstown, Maryland that was open. And I just happened to be in Maryland, which was about 75 miles west of where I was living in Maryland, when I was living in Odenton near Laurel, Maryland. And the day I had to go for the interview to do the test for the job there, they had one of the biggest snowstorms in Maryland history. They were telling people to stay off the road, stay off the highway and whatnot, but there was no way in hell that I was going to miss that job opportunity. And thanks for the grace of God, I had a 4x4, and I drove there. I got up. I was supposed to be there, I believe, at 10, and usually it takes about an hour and a half to get there or whatever. I left at 6 in the morning, and I got there at 9. So it took about 3.5 hours for me to get there. And when I showed up, the news director, Bob Borngesser, rest in peace, he told me, like, you know what? I didn't think he was going to show up. I'm impressed. And he took me around the station and all that stuff, showed me around or whatever. We did an interview. And this was maybe 3-4 weeks before I was about to get discharged. So fast forward to the day I'm getting discharged, getting out of the military after 6 years. I remember going to see my first sergeant and signing all the papers or whatever. And he said, okay, what are you planning on doing? And I looked at him and I was like, I don't know. I want to do this broadcasting thing. I want to get in front of, you know, the air and be on the air or whatever and do sports or whatever. But I really haven't had a job opportunity. Nobody's offered me a job. And he said, well, best of luck to you. And I remember going back to my friend's house because they had already packed up my stuff. I was married at the time. You know, it was my first wife. And, you know, I remember being at my friend's house, and I said, you know what, I'm tired. And you know how it is when you just don't know what you're going to do and you feel a little depressed and you feel like you want to go to sleep. I went and took a nap. And I took a nap, and the phone rang 2 hours later. My friend said, you know, you got a phone call, Mike. And it was Bob Borngesser on the phone. And that's when he said, hey, if you still want this job, it's yours. And I said, wow. And let me tell you something, Yammer. It was out because I had a top secret clearance, because I had the credentials or whatever. I could have gotten a job in the private sector as a private contractor. And I could have been making, I think, coming out about $80,000-$85,000 a year to start, you know, working for people like Boeing and stuff like that. But I didn't want to do that because I wouldn't have been happy that, even though the money was great for somebody who was at the time was 24, 25 years old, I didn't want to do that. So I accepted this job in Hagerstown, Maryland for like $7 an hour. You know how that goes.
Oh, God.
But I loved doing what I did, man. And, you know, eventually, you know, if you're strong enough and you work hard enough and you love and you're passionate enough, you know, it'll pay off literally and figuratively. So, you know, here I am 21 years later.
Yeah, and you look, your path, because you go from Maryland to Dallas, correct?
I went from Maryland to Fresno. No, I went from Maryland to Fresno, Fresno to Nashville, Nashville to New York, New York to Dallas, and then that's when I got to ESPN in 2004.
Wow.
So I got to ESPN the thing is, you're talking about the money thing, I went from $7 an hour to working in New York, you know, in 4 years. So in 4 years, I got to New York, and then I've been, luckily, thank God, by the grace of God, and I'm just blessed to say this, man, 4 years into my career, I've been in the top 10 market or network ever since. And that's amazing to me, man. I just thank God for it every day.
How would you classify, because you mentioned the creativity, right? And you wanted to take a job. You could have earned some significant money as a young guy in your 20s in the private sector. You say, no, I'm not going to be happy doing this. And I think that's the one thing that always resonated with me when working with you. I don't think you ever were on set doing a show where you weren't having fun. And that's like one of the things that I learned watching you, because you had obviously been at ESPN for a few years longer than I had been. And, you know, you kind of surveying the land, but you always had fun on set. So how would you classify your tenure at ESPN?
You know, I look at ESPN and look, it's hard working at ESPN. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. It's a lot of things that go into it, but it's hard working at any major network, man. It's the biggest brand. It's the best brand. It is sports. When you think about sports, you think about ESPN. It's almost like, you know, back in the day, you didn't say, give me a copy. You said, Xerox this. You know what I mean? It was, they were there. And when it comes to sports, broadcast and ESPN is the brand. You don't say, give me a soda, say, give me a Coke. ESPN is that brand. So I thank ESPN for giving me that platform, for giving me the notoriety in 9 years being there and putting me on all those shows and giving me the exposure. So I'll set that and say it like this. But, you know, having fun, you know, sometimes, you know, behind the scenes, it's not always as fun. But when you're on the air, and, dude, that is just, that's what you love to do. You love talking sports. Yeah. You and I, as sports fans, that's what you're passionate about. So why not have 100%. Fun? I mean, it's the best job to ever have, to be quite honest with you. And the thing about it is, I don't even consider what I do a job, because a job ain't nothing but work. We have a career. We have an opportunity to do something that we enjoy doing, have fun doing it. So when you're on the air, man, that's just naturally enthusiasm. You know, it's almost like being, especially if you're with a good co-anchor, like, if I'm with you and you're having fun and you got a great attitude, man, you know, it's easier. And you know how it is, man. You can be on the air. There are some people that are miserable that you just don't want to work with. You got to sit there for 3 hours with that person. It's like, oh, my gosh. And you already look at the schedule and you see who you're going to anchor with and like, oh, my gosh, this is not going to be fun. But you, as an individual, have to make it as fun as you possibly can. If the other person doesn't want to come along, then so be it. But dude, I love what I do, man. It's the best, once again, opportunity I've had in my life, man. And I just cherish it every day. And now that I've done this, it's just time to try and parlay this or make a transition and continue to do other things I enjoy doing, man. So why not love it? You love it. I see the same enthusiasm that, you know, you're so smooth and so good on the air and so knowledgeable and always prepared. But you still have a lot of fun, man, and you just have a great way of doing it. You have a knack for doing it. So I can respect and admire what you do, so why not do it myself?
I appreciate that. And it's funny, too, because you mentioned that fun aspect. I remember doing some shows with some people, and they weren't having fun. And it becomes almost like a miserable experience, because, like, you're out there, like, geeked up, ready to have a good time and, you know, have some laughs. And you look to your left or your right and you go, what is going on over there? And everyone has bad days, and I get that. But, you know, just to be in that moment doing the show, and I know you understand this, it's like it takes you out of the world. It's like you're
some people have
not
bad days. Some people are just, that's just who they are. You know, there are people that I gave the nickname. You know, I think you know who they are. I nicknamed them Misery. I'm like, hey, yeah, I got to work with Mr. Misery. Misery. You know, it's just, you know, they're miserable people. They're just down. I'm like, man, you got a great job. You're making good money. You're not digging ditches. And, dude, I got an appreciation for where I came from, for what I went through to get there, the route that I took, man. I'm blessed. Why not be happy? I'm blessed. I get to go wake up every day and I get to talk about sports for a living. Man, do you realize how many people would die for that opportunity? And oh, by the way, I got an opportunity to do it on ESPN and now at Fox Sports 1 and on national radio and national TV. Are you serious? Why not be happy? You know, it's not digging a ditch, which, by the way, when I was 15, 16 years old, I actually had to do. And I realized, well, this is not for me. So I don't want to have that kind of job. I want to be able to do something I enjoy doing every day.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. What's the career highlight for you? Like that moment that stands out.
Gosh, man, that's always a tricky question. You know, just a lot of, I'll tell you my favorite moment that I can just remember, and it was actually two of them. And I think what the highlight for me is, and this is going to sound a little egotistical, man, is when somebody that you have grown up admiring and respecting and idolizing comes to you and tell you how much they enjoy you. When that happens, dude, it's like, wow. It's almost like, mama, I made it. My first experience was, you know, I'm in the bathroom at ESPN, and I'm at the urinal, man. I'm just handling my business, and in walks in this guy, 6'9", 6'8", 6'9", or whatever, and he comes to the urinal right next to me, and he looks over to me, and I look up, and he says, "What's up, young fella? What's going on, man? How you doing, Mike?" It's Magic Johnson.
Wow.
Taking a whiz right next to me. It's my first time meeting this dude. I'm like, yo, now I'm too nervous to even pee. I'm like, yo, this dude is Magic Johnson. No. And I'm like, I'm happy that he's there. I don't.
And you're not shaking hands after.
Yeah, we're not shaking hands. You know, the man cove, I can't really look at him while he's doing his thing, and then he shouldn't be looking at me. You know how that goes and all that. Yep. So there's that little tension right there. But at the same time, it's like, did he say my name? He knows me? And, you know, then, like, he'll say things like, you know, I like your work, man. Keep doing, you know, he's working at ESPN. It's my first time working. And then the second one was I was at a golf tournament in North Carolina, and I'm on the driving range, and all of a sudden you see this guy walking towards me, man. He had on a hat and glasses and darker fellow, whatever, and he's walked towards me, and he says, he extends his hand, and I'm looking at it, it's Michael Jordan, man. And Michael Jordan says, "Mike, thanks for coming, man. I like your..." Same thing. I'm like, when these guys know who you are,
God.
Athletes, entertainers, you know, I'm looking at my wall right now when Ice Cube and Easy, not Easy, but a Lil Wayne and Snoop and all these guys know who you are and they say they like your work. Dude, how can that not be a highlight, man? It's like, you know me. I'm just, you know, but once again, I got to give a lot of credit to ESPN and the exposure that they give, because, you know, a lot of everybody watches that network, and hopefully now people start watching Fox.
What's the interaction with Snoop like?
The first time I interacted with Snoop, I was doing NFL Live, and I remember he came in, did an interview. I remember the suit I had on and everything. I had on a brown suit, and he came in. He was like, What's up, nephew? Oh, I like that suit, man. That's tight, bro. Them pinstripes on that brown. That's really tight, nephew." And he came in and he sat down. We was talking about, you know, he's a Steelers fan. And we sat down and started talking about the Steelers a little bit. And I remember another guy came in with him and he had this big old backpack. And dude, I don't know what was in that backpack. I can't confirm or deny what was in that backpack. But let's just say that when I took a whiff of that backpack, yeah, I probably would have, you know, failed the drug test just from taking a whiff of that. Yeah, that was the first time. And then the second time, you remember Jay Harris and I used to do this online show called Both Sides of the Ball?
Absolutely.
Well, Snoop did one with us, man. It's one of our favorite episodes. It was one of our best episodes. And he just came in and just hit the ground running, man. Everybody enjoyed doing that as well. So, you know, it's been fun. A lot of fun interacting with these guys, man.
That is spectacular. Mike, I know you're running short on time. I'm going to leave you with this question because this might be the hardest question you've ever received, because everyone says home is where the heart is. And yet I follow you on social media. I've, you know, kept in touch with you over the course of the last few years since we both left ESPN. You can't seem to be happier in the city of Los Angeles. I don't know if it has to do with the fact that there's no snow anymore that you have to dig yourself out of to get to work, or the sun is always shining. Maybe you took up surfing. I know you're at the gym all the time. But what's the best coast? Is it the East Coast or the West Coast?
Oh, gosh. Now, I was born in New York in the Bronx, and New York will always be home. But I never want to go back and live there after living in Los Angeles, man. There's no doubt in my mind. Out of every city I've ever lived in, ever been in, Los Angeles is my favorite city. The last 3 years of my life have been the best 3 years of my life. The happiest I've ever been, man. I thank God for that once again. And a lot of that happens to coincide with me being here in Los Angeles. It just is, man. It's just, and you know, a lot of, you know, you appreciate something like this when you come from Siberia, which we came and then moved out here, which we were in Siberia, and that's Bristol, Connecticut. When you move out of Siberia and you're in lockdown for that many years or whatever, and you come out, man, you just appreciate it even more. But to be able to leave there and come here is night and day, dude. You know how that is. I don't have to explain that to you, but it's great.
You were telling that story earlier in the show about having, you know, that huge snowstorm
perform before your first real interview down in Maryland. I flash back to getting the call the night before, knowing there was going to be 12 inches of snow the next morning, and someone in the scheduling department at ESPN would call you and say, hey, can you work this good show? Can you work that good show? Maybe you'll do three in one day. I remember getting up at 4 a.m. to dig and shovel my car out of snow so that I can get into work and literally spend the next, I don't know, 12, 13 hours doing a couple shows, because those were like great opportunities to be on shows that you couldn't always get on. So I don't have to worry about the snow anymore. But I'll look, and LA's great, Mike. You got to come up to San Francisco.
I was just up there about a month ago, man. I went up there to, I was in and out. I went in for a little conference, man. We went in toward Google. And all that stuff, man, we went and met some venture capitalists or whatnot, man. So I'm trying to get into the apps thing and trying to see how that works and trying to get some funding and all that stuff as well. So, yeah, I went up there with my man Ryan Neese, who works with me at Fox, or used to work with me at Fox, who's Ronnie Lott's son, played in the league himself. But, yeah, it was fun, man. So next time I definitely get up there, man, I'll definitely call you, because I've only been up there twice.
Well, the three of us have to get together. I just did an event for Ryan a couple weeks ago. So, because he used to be with us. Yeah, at Pac-12. So, and obviously Ryan is still with us. God. Yeah, he is awesome. What a small world. And look, it's great to hear you. And I know, I love that you're happy. You come up to San Francisco. It's different than LA. You guys got the warmer weather, but we have wine country up in our parts. So
I'm starting to appreciate a little red wine, a little Pinot Noir. I'm starting to appreciate that a little bit more.
All right, if you like the Pinot, I got a spot for you. I will personally drive you there to this place. It's the best Pinot I've ever had.
I'm gonna hold you to it, man.
It's game, set, match. It's called Red Car, by the way, small boutique place. I should try to see if I can get a plug and maybe a bottle or two that comes my way
there
because of that plug. The best Pinot I have ever had in my entire life. Mike, thank you so much for coming on, man, sharing your story, some great moments with Magic and Jordan and Snoop, and I love the fact that you call the old mothership Siberia, because Lord knows there's some times digging out of that snow. I felt like that was the case. So continued success. Best of luck to you with Thrill of Entertainment. I'm really excited for you, and I hope to see some of your projects in the near future.
Mike, thanks so much, my man. You've always been one of my favorite guys, man. I wish you the best of luck. You're killing it. Keep on destroying the game. Keep on making it happen, my brother.
Always great to be able to catch up with Mike Hill. And I know during the podcast, he made reference to his company. He's the CEO of Thrill of Entertainment. And some of the projects that he's working on, it's actually going really well for him. We had this conversation for this podcast a couple weeks ago, but this upcoming weekend, actually, it's great timing. Extra, if you watch the entertainment show, is going to be running a segment. It's called What Women Need. Mike sent me a clip of it. It's really funny, so I encourage people to check it out. It's going to be running on Extra, but that segment of What Women Need, that's all Mike Hill, and that's Thrill of Entertainment. So wish him nothing but the best. And I know we started off the podcast by making reference to the raffle that we're putting together here for the Bose noise cancellation, the wireless headphones, which once again are the best headphones I've ever had. Just go onto that iTunes page. You can rate, subscribe, and review. All of those steps are really important. But in order to win, make sure you write that review, because our last guest of the month is going to pick a number one through however many reviews that we have. And the winner, I'll just send you out the pair of headphones. They're once again worth $350. So once again, you can't enter without writing that review. If there's an episode that you like or a guest or something about the show that that you really are enjoying, make sure you just write about that, just to kind of give you some fodder or some ideas of what to put on that iTunes review. So once again, always appreciate you subscribing, downloading, and listening. And don't forget to write those reviews. We'll see you next week.